Díobh galair agus tá falsearóth go dian orgáil con seo ar chinnach seachtaní ar an maidin dónach seo. Good Sunday morning and welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour on this soft Sunday morning. Lá bogey am wihan sin. It's a soft day out there, as we used to say. We have an interesting programme for you this morning. I don't know if you got up early enough there at 8 o'clock to catch the 8 o'clock news from RTE, and we're delighted indeed to be now presenting the RTE news at 8, and at 9 o'clock we have a note, because of course we run for 2 hours. But there was a little snippet in there about an effort that is underway, or was underway in Ireland today, to boycott the Mass. And today my guests are Archbishop Terence Prendergast, and he will be talking about an apostolic visitation that he has been appointed to make to Ireland, and he'll be explaining what that is. And at the second half of the show, I have Father Sean McDonough. Sean McDonough is a Columban father, originally from Nina in County Kildare. I'll be phoning him. He'll be in transit actually from Derry back to Navan, to where Dalgan Park is. And there was an association of priests formed in Ireland a few weeks ago, and over 400 priests turned up in Portlaoise at the inaugural meeting. There is a bit of concern among the clergy about how issues relating to abuse have been handled. And, of course, that is one of the reasons that Archbishop Prendergast has been appointed to the Diocese of Tuam as an apostolic visitor, is to do an analysis and to study. And, as I say, he'll be explaining that to us. So that's coming up. But before we get into that, I do want to tell you, of course, that we are very grateful indeed to the Heart and Crown, the Monterrey Resort, and the Friends of the Gaelic Hour for their support for this programme. Without their help, we would not be on the air. And consider becoming a Friend of the Gaelic Hour and support local Irish broadcasting. You can see get details of that on the Gaelic Hour website. That's www.thegaelichour.ca. And on the website, you'll find our archives contain the magazine shows going back to 2006. Of course, we're now in our sixth year of broadcasting here on Chin 97.9 FM. We also have a calendar up there which have some local events, and we try and keep the playlist up to date. And the playlist is already up there for today's show. So if you like any of the music that you hear here and you're curious what CD I take it from, you'll get a listing on the website. And we have links also to other Irish organisations. And if you, of course, want to drop me an email, or if you'd like a dedication, you can reach me at austin@thegaelichour.ca. Now, when I send out the monthly newsletter, which I'm preparing for next month, I send a monthly newsletter out, and I have nearly 1,300 on my mailing list. If you would like to receive a copy of the newsletter, send me an email, austin@thegaelichour. And we put the schedule in there. And this month's schedule, I had Paddy Doyle listed to be my guest today. And unfortunately, and I don't know if Paddy is listening, Paddy is the author of a book called The God Squad. And Paddy was supposed to come in live. And unfortunately, Paddy is in hospital in Ireland and unable to come on. He contracted an infection. Paddy is paraplegic and is confined to a wheelchair. And he got an infection in his arm from the rubbing on the wheelchair, and is on a drip at the moment outside Dublin in a hospital in Lucan. And Paddy, if you are listening, get well soon. And we do send you our best wishes. But Paddy, as I say, had written a book called The God Squad, because Paddy, at 4 years of age, was sentenced to 7 years of in an industrial school for not being under the care of a guardian. And he wrote a wonderful book, and he was going to talk to us about that. But we'll have Paddy on probably in November. But first of all, as I say, our Archbishop is heading to Ireland, to the Diocese of Tuam. And let's hear how he explains what an apostolic visitation is.
Recently, our Archbishop Prendergast was appointed by the Holy See on an apostolic visitation to Ireland, to the Diocese of Tuam. And he's about to head over across the Atlantic and participate in that role. And I have the Archbishop on the phone with me.
Good to talk with you, Austin.
Now, an apostolic visitation, first of all, for us lay people, could you tell us what it is?
Well, apostolic means it's done by a representative of the apostolic church, so somebody representing the Pope or an archbishop or a bishop, and it's meant to help another church or another body. We had an apostolic visitation to seminaries a number of years ago, and I was helping Bishop Henry do that. I was his assistant, but he was the apostolic visitor. So an apostolic visitation then is a specially arranged program of consultation and visitation to find out the state of a particular church or diocese or country or ecclesiastical province. And so in my case, I'll be going to the Archdiocese of Tuam and Archbishop Collins from Toronto will be going to the Archdiocese of Cashel and Emily. Archbishop Cardinal O'Malley from Boston will be going to Dublin, and Cardinal Murphy O'Connor will be going to Armagh. So those are the four metropolitan sees. And we are going to do two things. One is to examine how, in the light of the sexual abuse issues that have surfaced in the last several years, but which have become more prominent in the last year or so, how the bishops have responded or are responding to the safeguarding guidelines that they have established for protecting children and vulnerable people in their churches, in their dioceses, in their parishes, in their other centers where young people gather, and also how in their interpretation of complaints and their handling of complaints, how did they manage to fulfill what canon law prescribes in terms of dealing with offenders and people who have been hurt. So those are the two tasks that we have in mind in this particular apostolic visitation.
So in order to do your visitation, who would you be talking to? Who will you consult with?
Well, I'll be consulting widely as possible. Obviously, I need to speak with the bishop himself and his staff and with a cross-section of the clergy. I will also be consulting with bodies in a particular diocese. The Archdiocese of Chum has a diocesan pastoral council of lay people who advise the bishop. There's also a finance committee. And so I'll be talking with them as representatives of the laity, how they see things going, what kind of involvement there is, how this is pushing the church to change its procedures and protocols and so on. As well, I will also make myself available to anyone who wants to speak with me. Now, that may be victims of abuse, that may be people who have a particular angle that they would like to share with me, but the idea is that I would make myself available.
When you arrive at whatever recommendations and your report, who do you submit that to then, Archbishop?
Well, obviously, that will go basically to the Congregation for Bishops, who are the ones who have set up this procedure. I'm not exactly sure what kind of communication there will be with the people of the diocese on the point of departure. There may be something that will come back later. This is the kind of issue that is going to be worked out, elaborated, in consultation with the Congregation for Bishops in Ireland, in Rome, in early October. And only after those kinds of procedures and protocols have been elaborated will bishops begin the visitation proper.
Given that a bishop, an archbishop, is responsible for his own see 100%, any recommendations or any deficiencies that you might find, is the local ordinary required to pay attention?
That I don't know. I know that it's not going to be up to me to do that, to communicate that. That will be the Congregation for Bishops and the Holy Father working for them. I am simply a kind of liaison going between. I am not the boss of the Archdiocese of Tuam or the bishop there. I'm a representative of the body from Rome coming to help the local church in Ireland. So exactly how that will work out, I don't know, but certainly no one should presume that I'm a higher authority in the Archdiocese of Tuam than the bishop himself is. He still retains that right. He's not been suppressed or moved out of position, but I will dialogue with him, and I will learn the circumstances as I see them. I'll probably share them with him to the extent that I can, and also share my conclusions with the Holy See. And it will be up to that body, I presume, gathering together the data from the other three visitations to make a kind of a report to the church in Ireland, to the bishop, take any disciplinary action that's needed and so on.
And I do understand that you have a family connection to the Diocese of Chum.
Yes. When I spoke first with Archbishop Neary of Chum, I said, would the parish of Glenamaddy have anything to do with Chum? Because that's where my maternal grandfather was born, and he said, "Yes, it's one of the parishes on the edge of the just after you get into the diocese. It's Glenamaddy is in the early parts of the diocese when you get into on the more eastern side of the diocese." Pardon me.
So you'll get an opportunity to probably trace some family relatives and visit.
I've asked the pastor there to see if he has any records of my grandfather, who was born somewhere between 1865 and 1866. We don't know the exact date. We know he was a certain age when he got married, and so that pushes it back to those years. But I don't know more than that. I don't know.
Well, I know this is a challenging post that you've been asked to fulfill. Is it a fair question to ask? Are you looking forward to it? Because I can imagine it's mixed emotions.
Yes. Well, I think the subject matter is a very complex one and a very difficult one. So that will have some painful consequences in listening to people's tales of difficulty and suffering. That's never fun. But if one has the hope of being able to help, that'd be good. I know that in my case and in my family's case, our family gained a lot from the handing on of the faith from Irish forebears. And so if we can return the favor somewhat in helping the Irish church get over a difficult patch at this time and strike out for newer, brighter horizons, I think that's a great thing to do. And so in that sense, it's an honor. It's a little bit scary. You don't know exactly what's going to happen. And these are very contentious issues. And it's a media issue that touches a lot of people, and people want to know exactly what you think about things. And I have to learn a lot before I can speak. I don't want to go in there and have all the answers. I don't have any answers. I'm there to be a brother, to accompany them, and to see what, from the outside, our faith community can bring to bear on these people who have suffered a great deal and people who want to begin again. I know I had a very positive impression in talking to Archbishop Neary and his staff. They're very much looking forward to it. I suspect there's a little bit of anxiety on their part as well, but together we're going to give our best shot, and hopefully that will help renew the church in Ireland in the way that everybody wants.
One final question, Archbishop. Is there a timeline between, are you expected to produce a report by a specific date?
No, the organizational meeting is still taking place only in early October. I was telling people that I was hoping to be able to get in a visit before Christmas. I'm not sure that's going to be manageable now. I think they want us not to begin until we've all sort of got a kind of plan of approach and a common view, instead of one bishop going off and doing one thing, another doing another. So we're going to try to have a kind of coordinated approach to the visitation, obviously in consultation also with the Irish Church. So I would imagine we should probably have a preliminary report by Pentecost of next year, which is late June, maybe before that. But I don't want to see it drag on for years. I would rather get the job done as quickly as we can and help the Irish Church to take on the challenges that lie ahead for them.
Well, Archbishop, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on and enlightening us, and do appreciate you fitting us in your schedule.
You're most welcome. Very happy to be with your listeners, and ask those who are of Catholic, even those of goodwill, to say a prayer for the success of the trip.
Indeed, Archbishop. Thank you very much indeed.
God bless.
And that was Eleanor Shanley in the Magdalen Laundry. Before that, we had the Archbishop explaining to us about an apostolic visitation to Ireland that he is participating in. And as he said, there will probably be the new year. We're going to go into our commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be setting up a call with Father Sean McDonough, a Columban father, who will be telling us about telling us some of what is happening in Ireland relative to the crisis that has been reported on.
CJLL Chin Radio Ottawa, by popular demand, is proud to present the 2011 Chin Radio Winter Picnic. There's truly something for everyone this winter at the Chin Winter Picnic, a great all-inclusive vacation in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, at the All Suites at Catalonia Bavaro Beach Golf and Casino Resort, located on one of the best beach areas at the edge of an exotic jungle. Looking for a classic getaway in a secluded oceanfront paradise? Or a family adventure with kids' activities, sailing and snorkeling? The 2011 Chin Winter Picnic offers all of this and more, along with 5 bars, 4 excellent buffet restaurants, 5 theme restaurants, kids' club, golf courses, nightly shows, and casinos. Plus, receive our Chin Radio bracelet to participate to all of our outdoor activities and entertainment, and a souvenir t-shirt, chin cap, and beach bag. From February 4th to February 18th, 2011, with a non-stop direct flight from Ottawa to Punta Cana, the vacation of your dreams is at an ever low, low price, starting just at $1,090. Don't delay. Book today. Call 613-521-6111. And our agents Anne at extension 221 and Georgina at extension 230 will be happy to assist you. Don't forget, 613-521-6111, extension 221 and 230. See you there. Brought to you by Unico, Park and Fly Ottawa, and Aditech Design and Printing.
The Monterey Inn is your premier choice for an exceptional stay in a resort setting along the Rideau River, close to the airport and a short journey to the nation's capital. The Monterey Inn offers a host of features for the discerning visitor that includes meeting and conference facilities, an outdoor heated pool, and a fitness center. Drop in and enjoy the fine dining experience of La Bodega Lounge. The Monterey Inn at 2259 Prince of Wales Drive, 613-288-3500 or www.monterey.ca.
The Heart and Crown Irish Pubs had their humble beginnings in the heart of the Byward Market in 1992. The Snug Pub was opened in 1997. Mother McGinty's and Rushing Doves were added in 2001, and now, in 2010, the Druid. You can also visit the Heart and Crown on Preston Street, the Old Dubliner and Poorhouse on York Street, and the James Street Pub on Bank Street. The Heart and Crown Irish Pubs, for quality food and entertainment.
You're down and out, when you're on the street, when you
And that was Tommy Fleming and Bridge Over Troubled Water. You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron, and you heard the Archbishop explaining his apostolic visitation to Ireland, as I mentioned. We would be talking to Father Sean McDonough, and Father Sean is involved in a priest association that was established recently in Ireland. Good afternoon, Father Sean, and welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Oh, thanks, Austin, and it's a lovely autumn day here, so...
And
I don't know how the weather is at your side.
It's as I opened the program this morning and said it was Donuk Bogomoyan Shin Armajan, because it's a grand soft day out there.
Grand soft, I see. Well, so, it's a lovely day here.
Right.
Quite cool but sunny, yeah.
So, Father, you're a member of the Columban congregation, which is...
Yes, I'm a Columban missionary. I spent a lot of my time in the Philippines.
And from Nina originally?
From Nina, County Tipperary. I worked as a missionary on the island of Mindanao.
While you were there, you also did a number of studies and you have published some work.
Oh, yeah. I studied anthropology actually in Washington and linguistics at both Georgetown and Catholic University. So basically, I'm interested always in sociological and cultural things, you know.
Now, before...
And, of course, in recent times with ecology.
Right. Before we talk about the... apostolic visitation. A lot of people over on this side may not be aware of the meeting that happened in Port Laois. Can you give us a little bit of background on that and what led up to it?
Well, basically what led up to it was, as you say, I do a lot of writing in for a column in the universe, but also for papers here. And I gave a retreat to a group of redemptorists, and we were basically saying one of the nights that there's no forum for priests in this country. There was a representative one called the National Council of Priests, but that died about 5 years ago. So a group of us got together in the mid-June in Athlone, and we said, why not try to set up another organization that will be a voice for priests? Now, we will not be setting it up, in a sense, as a representative body. You know, we basically have what we call a reform agenda, that we would like to see that the choices that were made at Vatican II, that they be put into practice. And we were hoping that the kind of restoration things that had happened in the last pontificate, that they would be laid aside. So Brendan Hoban, Father Brendan Hoban, who was one of that group, wrote an article in the magazine called The Furrow, which is a pastoral and theological magazine. We got about 70 people to sign that, and then we said we would convene a meeting in Port Laois. We kind of had expected that there might be about 50, 70 priests there. In actual fact, 350 turned up. So it was a clear sign of just how dissatisfied many priests are in Ireland with the leadership of the church. It was very almost traumatic to hear how lonely and isolated many, particularly of the secular and diocesan clergy, felt. So what we hope to do now is we're not interested in having an organization with a lot of bureaucracy. What we're trying to do is do a lot of this, although we'll be going around to get representatives from the various dioceses, but setting up a website, where issues that are pertinent to priests and also where priests can speak about issues that are pertinent to their to the church, to their congregation, to what's happening in society, and including myself, what's happening on the ecological front. So we will be trying to marry expertise. If a person has an expertise, for example, in the area of education, then we'll be hoping that that person will write and represent the views of the members of the association, which at the moment stand almost at 500. So it's rapidly growing. And we hope that it will have a strong voice for change. And one of the areas, and there was an effort in Ireland today from Jennifer Sleesman, a Catholic granny from the south, Scriverine, asking women not to go to church today because of the way she feels that women are not honoured in the Roman Catholic Church. And we'll see how that particular, how many people follow that example. But it's certainly true that a lot of women feel very alienated from the church as it is at the moment, and it would be very much incumbent on the leadership of the church to take that very seriously.
Now, Father, you said that you wanted this organization to be a strong voice for change.
Yes.
So far from the initial group and the initial meetings, when you defined that, and you also indicated that you would hope that the direction of the last pontificate would be laid aside, what type of things are you talking about?
Well, for example, we're talking about, I don't know whether it has hit the Canadian church yet, a new translation of the Missal from Latin into English. I mean, many of us who have seen it are appalled by what has actually happened. First of all, there was no consultation. It was begun under the leadership at the time of a Brazilian or of a Chilean cardinal who is now in retirement in Chile, but actually was a great defender of Mr. Pinochet during the 1970s and 80s. So they basically have translated bad Latin into appalling English. Now, as a professional linguist, you know, when you go to study linguistics, you look at semantics. You can't translate a word for word into a new language, into another language. For example, et cum spiritu tuo. What we now say is the Lord be with you and with you and also with you. But now we want to go back and say and with your spirit, because that's more faithful to the Latin. Now, on a whole series of issues, there's no sacred Latin in Christianity. I mean, Jesus spoke Aramaic. The Gospels are written in Greek. Latin is not a sacred language and should never be. I mean, what they're trying to say, I think, is they want language in liturgy that is lyrical and poetic. But that's the genius of people. You don't send it to translators who try to translate word for word. You develop these prayers and you send them to people like Seamus Heaney, poets, for God's sake, so that the language that we're using has poetic resonances so that you can use it 1,000 times. So this is going to cause enormous pain and suffering and totally misguided and unnecessary. And a lot of priests won't actually use it because it would be so difficult to read. But all of that was done without any consultation with the faithful at all. So we find that kind of high-handed in the extreme. Another area, by the way, is, and it's probably refers back to the Archbishop, is the apostolic visitation. You know, people are asking, why visit Ireland? You know, I mean, for example, in Belgium, a bishop who was a bishop for 25 years, he's accused of sexual abuse. Wouldn't one think that people might actually start there? In actual fact, my recommendation would be for the visitors to start in Rome itself, because Rome has made extraordinary errors in this whole area. And what I'm a bit afraid of is that Rome is going to try and outsource the problem and outsource it to the Irish. Let me give you a simple example. Probably the most vicious and pernicious abuser across the Catholic world in the last 40 years was the founder of the Legion of Christ. You've probably heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Father Marcel Massil.
Mm-hmm.
He was accused of abusing boys and girls, including his own children, over a period of at least 4 decades. Yet the late Pope John Paul II considered him a saintly figure and that he's someone that young people could actually emulate. Now, the charges against him go back to the 1970s. Bishop John McGann of Rockville Center in New York, he sent complaints from former Legion people to the Vatican in 1976, 1978, and again right up to 1989. Nothing happened. And in actual fact, Marcel fooled a lot of people. He obviously fooled Pope John Paul II, but he also fooled the Harvard professor, Mary Ann Glennon. She was the former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. She dismissed any accusations against Father Massiel around the middle of the 1990s. And so when the accusations were finally made at the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith in 1989, they were not pursued. It took another 6 years. Now, Pope Benedict was Cardinal Ratzinger at the time. It was only in 2004 that actually they began to investigate these allegations. And, of course, when Pope Benedict became Pope, the year afterwards, he removed Martial from the ministry and commended him to a life of prayer and penance. But, I mean, here is an example. I mean, I would like to see the visitators going over that particular tranche of letters. Some of them actually were from the congregation of religion, of religious.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the people would feel that people like the late Cardinal Peronio, who received many gifts from Father Maciel, and also the former Secretary of State, Cardinal Sodano, that they received a huge amount of support and gifts, and for that reason, it's alleged they did not actually pursue charges against Father Maciel. That situation is multiple times worse than anything that happened in Ireland.
So, Father, then, as a result of that type of scenario, do you believe that the whole ethos and the whole confidence and trust within the church, irrelevant of what may happen in Ireland and irrelevant of what a visitation may produce, is seriously undermined because it's not happening at a higher level?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've no doubt about that. I mean, Father Marcel is just one. The former Cardinal Archbishop of Vienna, Cardinal Grohr, the very same. And one of the most striking things for me this year, and amazing, was the current Archbishop of Vienna is a man called Cardinal Schönborn. And he mentioned in June that he thought Cardinal Sodano, who was the Secretary of State then, protected any investigation against Cardinal Grohr for sexual abuse. Now, what did Pope Benedict do? Unbelievable. He forced Cardinal Schönborn to come to Rome and publicly apologize to Cardinal Sodano.
Mm.
When the dogs in the street knew that Cardinal Sodano was the one who blocked investigation into both Cardinal Grohr and Father Maciel. So, I mean, that was an... And the reason given at the time, you might have seen it, was only a pope can criticize a cardinal. I mean, this is unbelievable. I never heard it as any theological or moral principle. The reality is, see, the big difference between Ireland and any other place could be summed up in three words or four words. Judge Yvonne Murphy. She actually conducted an investigation where documents had to be handed over and people had to make statements under oath. Now, I would like to see an outsider, trusted outsider and competent outsider, do a similar type of critique of the congregation of what was a religious, I think it's now Institutes of Apostolic Life, how they handled. For example, one of the things that Marcel got away with, and recently Rome is kind of saying, how could this happen? A legionnaire had to take an oath never to speak ill of Marcel or never to criticize him.
Mm.
Now, the Vatican is saying, oh, wasn't this terrible? But they actually approved those constitutions 35 years ago. So why didn't they stop it then?
So,
I would be very afraid that Rome is outsourcing. Do you remember about last January, one of the Roman cardinals, actually from Brazil, Holmes, he decided to fly a kite and say, well, the child abuse thing is very much an Irish problem, because many of the people associated with it in Ireland and in Australia have Irish names. To her eternal credit, our president the following day, Mary McAleese, the following week, the new nuncio was presenting his credentials, and she just kicked that one very, very hard. Rome was attempting to do that, to put out a flyer that... But then, of course, what happened? You had the revelations about what happened in Belgium, the revelations about what happened in Germany, and none of those have Irish surnames, as far as I know, and the revelation now of what's happening in Italy.
So, Father, if I can drag you back, and you know, they always say when it comes to politics and everything in Ireland, it's all parochial. But if we come back to Ireland, and taking, as you said, that it was Judge Murphy kind of opened, turned the light on, and it opened the whole can of worms. Yeah. From your finger on the pulse of the clergy in Ireland, how do you, at the ground level react, and how do your colleagues react to the Murphy report, firstly? And secondly, in the Murphy report, one of the instances that I'm aware of is that there were two bishops tendered their resignation to the Archbishop of Dublin, yes, which he accepted, and they were subsequently rescinded.
Yes, ma'am. Not accepted by Rome.
Yeah. So, as the clergy in the street, a few things. One, it must be really tough because of the type of publicity that's out there to function as a priest and to hold your head up and say, you know, we're not all like that. And secondly, then, when the type of thing that happened with those resignations must make it also difficult.
It does. You know, it's very difficult, particularly for diocesan priests, because they find, you know, the reality in the Murphy Report, a small minority of priests actually abused, somewhat similar to the percentage of abusers in any other walk of life. And yet, the way often it was presented, almost every priest was considered to be an abuser. And they have found it extraordinarily difficult and are continuing to find it, which is one of the reasons that we, you know, would set about setting up this organization so that people could actually have a space where they can exchange, you know, views, their own views of things, and also deal with this issue. For example, in his talk to the group on the 15th of September, Father Brendan Hoban, he's from Killala Diocese, he's the parish priest of Ballina, but he started with a quote. He said, from an eminent lawyer in Dublin, who said, being a priest today in Ireland is like being a witch in Salem. And at the end of his quotation. And in many situations, that's very true, and false accusations have been made. So we got very poor leadership, of course, from the bishops. And I don't think the letter from Pope Benedict was actually adequate at all. And there's no leadership from, as I say, from the bishops. So the priests are actually they're floundering in many parts of Ireland, and that's just not fair, because certainly at a local level, I know in my own diocese, in my own town of Nina, the group of clergy there provide an extraordinary service, and they're considered to do so by the local population, by the local people. So it is very difficult. Now, I'm not too sure what this visitation is going to do to help that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It will need to be, you know, the visitation will need to be extraordinarily sensitive. And at the moment, see, one of the reasons why we had this cover-up is because of secrecy and cover-up of everything. So, like, one of our questions to the visitators will be immediately, is this going to be published publicly? Because if it's not, if we go through the same secretive processes that caused the problem in the first place, it's not going to solve the problem. It's actually going to be just another example of how official church works. The other thing, of course, was, and I'm sure the reasons for cover-up in many parts of the world, is this extraordinary notion that Rome had a scandal, that people would be scandalized.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it even, some of my good friends, my own classmates who left the priesthood, were never supposed to take any part in ministry, even in as reader, because the faithful might be scandalized. The reality is, of course, the faithful are scandalized for the opposite reason.
Mm-hmm.
To scandalize that here's a man who gave his life to the church, has to ministry in the church, and has a huge amount of expertise, and he's not actually been given any space in the church today. That's what scandalized. My own mother, God love her, when she died 10 years ago. That's what scandalized her, not the other nonsense that Rome had been going on with.
And to that point, I think you mentioned, you know, your mother was scandalized by that. What has happened and what is happening is shaking at a very deep level what has been the traditional faith, particularly of people, and without putting an age group involved, but those who were certainly pre-Vatican and those who would have been around in the first 10, 15 years post-Vatican.
Yeah. Well, it is now. But there has, we have to make a lot of corrections to some of the assumptions. Like the assumption out there, and somewhat in Pope Benedict's letter, is that these abusers were all post-Vatican II phenomenon. This is totally untrue. Most of the people involved actually were ordained well before Vatican II. So it's not an issue that's going to be brought back by, you know, by emulating the example of the cure of Ars, or having rosary and benediction again. I mean, a lot of the abuses took place in the 50s and 60s. And what we really need is an understanding of it, an understanding of ministry in the church. Like, will the visitators just come and ask the two questions? How did you deal with a sex abuse allegation, and what are the norms in place today? Because if they do, I mean, anyone could answer those questions by a fax. You wouldn't need to come to Rome or to Ireland. But the reality is, the culture of Ireland has changed dramatically in the last 40 years since I was ordained. The understanding of sexuality, the understanding of celibacy as an appropriate, for example, for diocesan clergy, all of that has changed. So are these people who are going to come in to be visitators, are they just going to be myopic and say, oh, we're going to only ask these two questions? Or are they going to ask, how is the Catholic Church in Ireland today going to share the gospel of Jesus, the good news of Jesus, with the contemporary world? Stop saying we can bring them back to the 1930s, this Nirvana time. Well, it never was a Nirvana time. The second question which the church has to answer, and these people as well, how are we going to minister to the needs of our people into the future? And all they will have to do is to go to a concelebrated mass and look at the hair or lack of it of people around the altar. Most are grey-haired or they're bald. Now, within 10 years, the average age of clergy in Ireland will be over 65. If you go back to the New Testament, Paul's letter to Timothy, he told the people, go out and get leaders in your church, leaders who will pass on the faith, leaders who will be healers, leaders who will lead at Eucharist. The church needs to start doing that. And it actually needs to doing it fast, because if we make changes, say, because we're totally forced to make it 10 or 15 years from now, the probability is, and I know this is a cultural anthropologist, that we will make the wrong choices. We should be now thinking seriously about this. In actual fact, we should have been thinking for the last 30 years. I remember, to go back to my Philippines, the first article I wrote for the Tablet newspaper, which is a Catholic newspaper published in Britain, on what we needed to do was written in 1979, because I was working with tribal peoples who were not Christian, and we were supposed to have leaders at the Eucharist for them within a 10 or 15 year period. These are profound questions. They're very important questions for the future of Catholicism, not just in Ireland, but around the world. So if the, and also to go back to the Pope's letter to Ireland, what kind of spirituality is actually suitable for people in different parts of the world today? And again, to say, oh, we'd just like to drag you back to the devotional practices of the past, that's not going to work. And it isn't impossible to begin to see devotions in our contemporary world that actually would attract particularly young people. And so the gospel has to be very much focused on social justice. And I would argue one of the best ways of helping young people to reconnect with the church is for the church to take seriously what's happening to the life of the world. And that's why the ecological issues, because that's what young people are interested in. Climate change, the destruction of species in their own areas, the shape of water around the world. All of these could help revitalize the church. I wrote an article there about 3 weeks ago for the Universe. And the point was simply this, that the government of Israel have actually closed off the area where Jesus was baptized because the waters of the Jordan are polluted and they're no longer fit for people to be baptized there. And I didn't hear one Catholic leader around the world make the connection between the pure, life-giving water of baptism and the Jordan. So in a sense, we're disconnected from the world around us. And the reality of religion, the Latin word for religion, is religio, to make these connections again, but to make them to the contemporary world. Don't be making them to the world of the 1920s or 30s or 80s. They had their own strengths, but they also had their own weaknesses.
Father Sean, we're going to have to wrap up. We're actually coming up close to the top of the hour. And it has been certainly enlightening, and I do appreciate you taking the call. What is happening in Ireland is certainly radically different than my experience growing up from how the clergy behaved and how they were perceived. And we can only hope that what I would have to describe as a grassroots movement within the clergy gives the type of return and has the impact that I know you guys are hopeful it will.
And one thing I think that could do that, if it was well planned, would be a countrywide synod over a period of 3 years. Start from the bottom up, like the visitators are from the top down. The problem was from the top down. So if you want to solve the problem, don't be coming from the top down again. Come from the bottom up.
Excellent. Well, Father Sean McDonough, thank you indeed for coming on the Gaelic Hour, and I do appreciate it. And as I say, sure. Best of luck, and thank you.
God bless you.
Okay.
Same old street, same old people is all you meet. Too long waiting, standing round. I'm sick and tired of the same old town. Same old drizzle, same old rain, same old walking back home again. Same old heartache, lost and found, same old story, same old town. And I go for a walk to see if there's new. The rain on the path leaking into my shoes. And I do talk to myself, as I might best friend, it's Sunday night, nearly Monday morning again. Our same old Monday, closed all day. The farmers and their whists of hay, same old hanging. Welcome back. Yeah. Bang the door.
And you are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. We're going up into the news, Askelga, which comes to you from Radio na Gaeltachta. And we will be back, of course, with an hour of music thereafter. I hope that you found the first hour there to be educational and you enjoyed it. It was certainly, and I was very pleased to be able to get Father Sean McDonough. So, by Major Asheris, Kuplan Omedi, Tereshan Noach, or Chin Nekashart's me.
My best friend, but Sunday night, nearly Monday morning again. You know, you'd often wonder
in Canada's.